Evidence Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprint, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this November the 6th on the West Coast and November the 7th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zones. We would like to welcome all those who may be listening on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world and on Blog Talk Radio.com. What an interesting 48 hours we've had. If you've gotten a chance to listen to the drivel put out by mainstream media, they are tripping all over themselves. They can't get the propaganda straight. And since propaganda is nothing but lies, they can't remember what lies they've told. And they can't remember what lies to use to cover up the lies that they've gotten caught in. Seems that many people are waking up to what's actually occurred at Fort Hood. I talked about that extensively, and I'm going to stand by what I said last night on last night's show. If you haven't heard it, certainly sign up for the archives at BBS Radio. When I have an opportunity to get around to it, I'll be putting that archive on my website, directlightproductions.com, as well. I'm going to use this word exclusively tonight. I used my intuition, and I went back and I looked at a series of murders that have occurred this year, since January 21st, 2009, up until yesterday, the 5th of November. There have been several murders that have occurred at Virginia Tech. Now, we had a big shooting that occurred, I think it was April 2007, going back and just jogging my memory. I haven't actually looked up the date. I could be wrong. If I am wrong, I apologize. But it seemed like that shooting took place around the time my piece on the Bush Klan and their genealogy came out. The piece called Deathbed Confessions, Photos, show that George H. Scherf, Jr. was the 41st U.S. president. That article is still being read. It's still being talked about. It's been referenced in many other articles on many other shows. Still, a lot of people don't even know about it, haven't read it. It doesn't really matter at this point. We know quite a bit about the Bush family. We know quite a bit about our government and all the corruption that's going on. When I use my intuition and I see the signatures of these people on these dirty deeds, this was a psyop all the way at Fort Hood. No doubt about it. Absolutely no doubt about it. The people there on the base can't get their story straight. It's evident to me that the base commander was told to follow a certain storyline and he won't answer certain questions. And I can't imagine that people there, you know, you're talking about there's pending investigation. The guy who's being blamed for this, a psychologist or a psychiatrist, I should say, Army psychiatrist who didn't like guns, didn't like practicing shooting, goes in there and with a 9mm and some other type of handgun, takes out 43 people, either injuring them or killing 13. And one of these people is a female police officer who's being called a hero. I don't know whether she is or she isn't. The purpose of the statement isn't to degrade or deprecate someone that may have been a hero, but it was a psyop. It was a diversion because of something else going on in that base. I've heard some people talking today on some shows saying that my comments are disinformation, that Israel's behind this, and I don't dispute that whether or not Israel is behind it. In fact, I have evidence that Israel is behind it. Or at least one of the murders that occurred at Virginia Tech, there is a connection to Israel. And I have the names. I'm not just making an outright claim. I have names. Okay? And people that are doing this know who the names are. So, you know, if I share it with my listening audience or write an article about it, that's my right to do that. Problem is, they don't like the truth coming out. Okay, so these are dangerous times for everybody. But when they're trying to kill the whole world with vaccines, poison the whole world, poison the food, poison the water, poison the atmosphere, poison our minds, our bodies, who is really safe if you think about that? So why even go into fear? You know, if you're going to die, you can't do anything about it. It's just going to happen. And I can tell you, having been there, done that, there's nothing to fear about it. In fact, they'd probably be doing a lot of us a favor. And I don't mean to belittle the importance of life on this planet or the importance of your life and your purpose in life. But you got to wake up and realize that this is nothing but international organized crime. And as I said last night on my show, this stunt pulled at Fort Hood was nothing but an orchestrated event to mask, to divert attention away from a massive robbery that was occurring. And you can read about this at worldreports.org. You can look on my website. It's in the news page. There's quite a bit that you can see. This even ties in, believe it or not, to the swine flu, to these vaccinations, to these pharmaceutical companies. It ties in, and I'm telling you, Israel is as much involved in this as the Bush clan and the Clintons and every other corrupt traitor that we have in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere around the world. The connections that I've been able to put together today are quite astounding. Just by investigating people who were murdered at these events. Now, there was a beheading that occurred at Virginia Tech on January 21st of this year. I don't remember hearing anything about that in the media. I mean, they'll talk about Michael Jackson in a car crash until the cows come home, and they won't talk about a female student being beheaded in a school cafeteria at Virginia Tech. Well, that was probably a warning to someone to cough something up, to cough up some technology. And that event leads to Israel, okay? It leads to pharmaceutical companies as well. And that'll be coming out, a piece I'll be working on very shortly here. So for those that think I'm putting out disinformation, you can't give it all out in one night, okay? We're basically not even into 48 hours after when this event started. Maybe we're closer to 36 hours, and I'm finding some interesting connections. So wanted to share that with you. Use your discernment. If you pay attention to what they're saying, you can hear them lie right before you. I had someone send me an email, told me that they heard a radio broadcast where they said these people died from friendly fire. And up until 5 o'clock this evening, that's what's been reported on mainstream radio. Imagine that. Friendly fire. Is there any kind of fire that's friendly? Think about that. Tonight's guest is a regular guest on Evident Footprints. He is our resident science advisor. He himself is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and he's my good friend and co-host every Friday, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show. You know what's going through my mind as you're saying this? I don't think you could, if you had a video game with one of those 50-millimeter cannons that they shoot a mile, 2 miles, and there are videos of a personnel in Iraq or Afghanistan shooting terrorists up in the mountains, you know, and you see these guys fly 100 feet when they get hit by one round, and their body is basically disintegrating in midair as they're doing cartwheels and handsprings. You can't shoot that well on a video game. And I think it's time to call in Arlen Specter and the Warren Commission and start getting out their yardsticks and making some measurements and drawing some lines again, like they did after the Kennedy assassination.
BBS Radio.
They used to generate the Warren Report. I think it makes a lot of sense that we should anticipate the presence of a lot of magic bullets as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you remember some of that nonsense where one bullet was supposedly changed directions three times, penetrated two or three different human beings, and did all these mystical things that an ordinary bullet just could not possibly accomplish?
Yes. Jim, if I can pause just for a moment here. Seth, if you can hear me, just double-check the stream here, if you would. I'm getting reports that they're trying to stop the show tonight. So if you can check that out for me, I'd appreciate it. And anyone out there, okay, word is we're up. So I'm going to let everybody know as best I can. I'm getting comments that I'm loud. I don't know if I sound loud to you, Jim.
It sounds a little louder than usual, but it's not uncomfortable.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just back off from my microphone until we can figure out what the heck is going on here, okay? Yes, I concur with you. I mean, there is a lot going on. You see, I have to give some credit to Christopher Story here. I did this last night. I actually read major portions of his article. His most recent article is talking about this issue of Fort Hood, and that there was a counter or a parallel operation going on, where they were acquiring some funds that belonged to the Chinese, described as 1933 notes. So these notes are evidently backed by gold or gold and silver and who knows what else. And because of all the bank accounts being frozen around the world now, these other countries are not putting up with Bush. And it so happens that Angela Merkel is in Washington, D.C., as this is going on, to sign papers to release funds, these international funds that I've been talking about for the past 3 years or so. And there was a report that Bush 41 went to Germany to basically throw a wrench in that whole process. And then it was suggested that he might even be in Texas during this operation. I don't see why he would be, especially if he's suffering from senility like they say he is. They say he's got Alzheimer's, and even demons can hang in there, you know, with Alzheimer's, I guess. There's a lot going on that people don't know about because they're not paying attention to everything. They're reacting to the sensationalism that the media is putting out there. And I have to tell you, the media is doing a piss poor job of reporting this story. Even for propaganda, they're doing a lousy job. I mean, anyone with half a brain can see right through this whole facade. How can a mainstream radio station, and I don't know which one it is, other than I was told that it was heard in the state of Washington, and it was one of the majors. It very well may have been Fox News, but I can't say that with any certainty. How can you say that this is friendly fire? I mean, what would provoke somebody to make such an idiotic statement? So right there in that statement alone, you know, why do they call it friendly fire? Because this guy is in the army? Well, they're already trying to convict this guy, you see, and the possibility of one guy hitting all these people on the world's largest army base is nil. It really is. He may, you know, you could hit somebody, if you have a weapon and they're not, they're in the open and they're unwary and they haven't had a chance to protect themselves. You come out of the clear blue sky shooting somebody, yes. But we heard reports that there were 5 shooters, then it was reduced to 3 shooters. One was killed, another one, got away, one was, captured, one was shot. Now they made a hero, and I don't know if this lady, this police officer on the base, was a hero. They say she was shot in the leg and I think the wrist, and she was the one that shot this guy. Well, if she's not the shooter, then she shot somebody who's being blamed for it. And, you know, did that really happen, or did someone else do it? I mean, it's crazy. But while all that chaos was going on, and I've heard something else too, that there were 3 events going on the base. Not just what we're hearing in the media. There were 2 other events simultaneously going on. So, as time goes on, I'm hoping, people will step forward and finally start telling the truth. We have to do this. Comment, Jim, before we move on to last week's topic?
Well, the only comment I have is that the one that I've already issued, and that is that there's no way in the world that the formal explanation is accurate or proper. And, you know, you don't have to be that well-informed or any kind of a genius, you know, to figure out that is the case, because this base is 15 miles square. I forget how many soldiers are on there, but, you know, there's an awful lot of them. And you start hearing gunfire and screaming and hollering like that, which is a normal thing that you would hear, you know, if somebody starts shooting people.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine that other people with weapons wouldn't show up. You know what I mean? This guy, he can't just wander around and drill 50 or 40 people. You know, the whole thing doesn't make any sense. And I did read Christopher Story's a presentation concerning this event, and even he talks about the fact that, you know, there was a lot of other stuff going on. And then, you know, the gentleman that I got the call from yesterday said that the number of helicopters that were flying in from other sources was astounding. And why would you do all of that, you know, if it was only one guy with a pistol? The other thing that's weird about it is, who called them in? Where did they come from? If all of this came down so quickly and so spontaneously, you know, where did anybody have the time to muster a whole squadron of helicopters from another place and bring them in there?
Well, it would have had to have been planned, wouldn't it?
It certainly sounds that way.
And it could be a quick in and out. Everybody load up with some money and take off. You know, Christopher, I have to hand it to him. I think he hit the nail on the head. He even commented that when this information became known to those behind it, they were shocked that he was able to figure this out. And I had mentioned it to 3 people last night myself prior to reading Christopher's article. There's something else there going on, and I can, it has something to do with China. So does the beheading at Virginia Tech. It was a Chinese girl. And it's related to swine flu and bioweapons. Biological weapons. Trust me on that, Jim.
None of those things would surprise me at all. But I dare say that there'll be a gag order put on every individual that was on the base. But you know how that stuff works? It doesn't. Sooner or later, this story's going to leak out, and there's enough insane stuff going on right now in different parts of the country. Sooner or later, the military is going to have to take a stand on these things. And the enlisted men always know more than what you think they know. Because
yes.
I've had lots and lots of friends in the military over the years, and I can tell you, it's a small, tight community. The gossip exchange is extremely high. And, you know, what happens in those places gets around. And sooner or later, we'll hear a lot more about this. And maybe it'll be sooner.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just recapping this whole thing. We talk about the truth. We talk about universal law. We talk about science. We talk about technology. We talk about consciousness. And there is such a determination to ignore or get us to ignore or be ignorant of the truth that these people would do anything. Really. And I use the word people with great hesitation. Put quotes around it. And you know what I mean there, and the listeners do too. What is so difficult about just facing the truth and having a peaceful world and a prosperous world and a meaningful existence? Why is that so unacceptable? You know what I'm saying, Jim?
Oh, yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. I've pondered the issue many times. And frankly, you know, it seems to come back to the understanding that Wilhelm Reich had about armoring, emotional armoring, and the effects that it has on the normal human being. Because, you know, what it boils down to is that a normal, natural love, not just between a man and a woman, but between human beings in general, cannot exist in an armored individual. And what takes its place is this, I don't know how you would categorize it except to say it's a form of evil, which is sort of the inverse of love. And that has to do with absolute control, limiting other people from doing anything pleasurable, not just sexually, but anything, you know, art, scientific pursuits, you know, any form of spontaneous expression is absolutely denied by people who reach this, or creatures who reach this lower level of total armament. And, you know, that seems to be exactly what we see in these so-called elite individuals. They are so anal and so desirous of absolute control. If you read their laws, I mean, every law that's published in this, thousands and millions perhaps, I don't even know how many there are.
There's millions of laws.
One of them curtails you from doing something that, you know, is related to spontaneous activity of some kind, or, you know, a normal human response, or a projection of an emotion. Now, certainly there are certain things which need to be curtailed, you know, like murder and theft and rape and things of that sort. But, I mean, you can't even pick your nose anymore. There's laws against everything. And that comes from the fact that you have very unhealthy people at the helm. And they're not human, never mind if they're reptilians or not. They're not human by definition. Because even though they have two arms, two legs, a trunk, and a head, the internal makeup of these beings is no longer capable of fulfilling the definition of what we understand as human. They can't respond emotionally in the normal way. They can't do anything constructive or loving in nature. And they're absolutely repulsed by anybody else attempting to do those things. And so they will go out of their way to stop it, as you pointed out, regardless of what it takes.
Yeah, well, I rejoice in the fact that they're getting older and older and older as time goes on, you know, and I just hope they stay around long enough to see where they're going. I really want them to be conscious of where they're going to spend eternity. You know, what else can you say?
Well, the only other thing that's worth mentioning is that a lot of them do procreate, and they generate, you know, offspring that are just as miserable as they are. So, sooner or later, the head has to be cut off the snake and maybe a few other parts.
Yeah, what a life, creating bankers and politicians. And drug addicts,
yeah.
And, you know. Oh. Well, Jim, you and I have been talking on past shows recently about hidden archaeology, anthropology, and technology, and the effect on mankind's consciousness. This is more of the same thing. It's directly related to what we've been talking about here for the first half of hour number one, and it's no coincidence that we've been talking about this and that we're going to go back into this and follow up on what we've not been able to cover. It's impossible to do all this in one show. So this is a recurring series, and I wanted to allow you to continue because you spent so much time preparing this talk.
Well, I'm happy to dive back into that. It's more constructive than what we've been talking about, but it's important to get these facts out, as you have pointed out. So,
yeah.
Digression is probably worthwhile. Yeah, we left off last week talking about the mystery of Gigantopithecus and other large ape-like creatures, otherwise known as Alma, Sasquatch, Yeti, etc. And I think my closing comments on that issue were that, you know, in fact, there's enough evidence to support the existence of these creatures, you know, and some pretty prominent people have looked into the fact that they have been around forever. One of them was Ivan Sanderson, another one was Bernard Houvelmont, who wrote the interesting book On the Trek of Unknown Animals. And there's another book called They Still Live, which seems to indicate that the Alma may be Neanderthal, which would be a milestone in our study of our own origins and the complexity of our past. And, you know, it's amazing to me, as a person who has been steeped in scientific interest since almost as early as my hatching, that these mysteries and all these interesting things are out there just waiting to be investigated, and nobody gives a rip about any of it. They much rather, you know, chase after ridiculously impossible investments like these stupid bank derivatives or the political pursuits or, you know, place all their interest in who's winning the game this week and all this kind of stuff. But I can't fault the way things have been for the last 100 years. It's just a pity that there aren't more people that are passionate about investigating these matters. I think it would really expand human consciousness to find out that we had an entire colony of living Neanderthals still on the planet. But I guess whatever's going to happen is going to happen. The next category that I wanted to discuss, because it's really amazing, and it's been going on for quite some time, and I think it's still going on, and that's this strange phenomenon of cattle mutilations. Now, you may have heard about this. Back in the 60s and 70s, there was a lot of noise about it, especially out in the western states, where hundreds of cattle were found literally mutilated, but not only mutilated, but done in such strange ways. In some cases, there'd be no viscera found in them at all. All their guts were removed, and just the bodies are laying around. In other cases, the heads were missing, and they weren't just hacked off. They were usually cut with some extremely sharp or extremely laser-like instrument that not only cauterized the wounds, but cut through bone and sinew and everything else in the process. In other instances, you had situations where only specific organs were removed. And you also had lots of situations where just parts were taken, and the animals were left to die, in agony without a leg or an arm or part of their spine or whatever. And these have never really been successfully explained, but it's interesting that there's a lot of different theories, of course. One is that this is the work of extraterrestrials in some type of high-tech vehicles, come in over the herds at night and steal animals for scientific purposes. But I suppose that could happen. The other more plausible explanation is that the military had been testing different gases and different bacteriological weapons, and then they would steal animals and do autopsies on them to find out if the effects had filtered down, you know, to the level where it was affecting lesser forms of life. There's just all kinds of possible explanations for it, but it's something that's been going on for quite some time, and I really don't know how much knowledge the general public has about it. Do you have any input on that, Don?
My chat window is going crazy. I hate to ask you to repeat that question. I was paying attention to everything you said except for the question. So.
Well, the question was very simple. I just said, with the extent of these mutilations and the time span that it has occupied, I was just wondering how much of that information had filtered down to the general public, and I didn't have a feel for that. So I was wondering if you knew.
Yeah, I can answer that. And then again, there were several accounts as to what's going on. It was proposed that this was occurring due to alien intervention. That the saucers would come down and basically a beam would maybe lift the cow up. I mean, there have been all kinds of accounts, and then drop it down and it's missing various body parts, as you described. Or that ground crews were seen, and every time one of these events would occur, there would be black choppers in the area, sometimes chasing people away. Sometimes abductions were described. Now, one really must take into account the amount of disinformation that goes out in these stories. But usually the recurring theme is that these cadavers, cows, for example, or horses in some cases, or other large animals are, and I'm not necessarily talking about birds, but the four-legged type, would be totally void of blood or bodily fluids. Now, there could be a lot of reasons for that, and I would suspect that there's probably biological research going on and or cloning, likely both, and a lot of development in the areas of what we're experiencing now. It's a source of materials, biological materials, very close to the human makeup in DNA when you're talking about a cow. Not much difference. So they can certainly use these field samples as an analyst supply of biological material for all these sadistic experiments going on. How much reason can you give to something like that? You know, we heard the stories from the days of the cowboys, and they put this in the movies today where you have these buffalo hunters that kill the buffalo just for the hides and leave the meat to rot out in the sun to become infested with fly larvae, so that it's worthless to those that would have eaten it. And how important is it? Well, it's certainly a phenomenon that's occurred over and over again. We had little cameo shots of cows lying beside the road in the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. If you remember when Richard Dreyfuss is driving, making his way through all this security that's set up to get to this mountain where this interstellar craft is supposed to land, and they're showing the cows alongside the road. Now, is that to imply that that they went to sleep when the U.S. military sprayed the gas on everybody to cause everybody to go to sleep, or you presume that's all that happened? But we get the clues as to what's going on. We get reports. Linda Moulton Howe made a career out of this topic. And yet, do we really have any solid answers? But I would say, likely, they're using the biological material for their sadistic experiments, whether it's cloning or hybridization or the manufacture of bioweapons that they're now unleashing upon humanity. Hope that answers your question.
Well, okie doke. And, there's certainly those aspects of it, and it's tied in, of course, with abductions, which is another amazing field of mystery to consider. And, it's interesting that the abduction phenomenon is a lot more widespread than people think. Several years ago, I met a gentleman, I can't think of his name right now, but he's from New England, and he had written several books on the subject of abductions. And he said,
would it have been Ray Fowler?
No, but if I hear the name, I would know it.
Okay.
But anyway, he had written extensively on this subject, at least in two books. And what he told me was pretty amazing. He said that their own research had demonstrated that under hypnosis, many people confess to having been abducted, and that the original events occurred in childhood, but then it was repeated every so many years, right up into their adult years. Now, of course, some of that could be improper questioning under hypnosis, because there is a phenomenon where if the hypnotist is not well trained in this field of regression, one of the things that happens is that if he asks questions in the wrong way, almost in a leading manner, then the patient will comply and generate an event because he wants to essentially please the person who has hypnotized him. And that only represents a relatively small component of the number of people that have been interviewed. And I have some experience in this direction myself, so I know it's a realistic phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
What that's all about is anybody's guess, but more than likely hybridization is one possibility, as you mentioned. And the other thing could just be that that they need some essence from human beings for other purposes, because some people are not returned. There are thousands and thousands of people that disappear off this planet every year with absolutely no explanation for what's happened to them. And that's something else that needs to be considered. Now, one of the things that ticked me off was finding out that our government, at least, and possibly other governments, actually have made agreements with hostile ET races, like the Greys, for instance, allowing them to have a field day gathering human specimens for their own purposes in return for technological information on weapon systems and propulsion systems and things of that sort. And that's just negative enough to probably be true, because I can easily see these elitists with their highbrow attitudes saying, oh, well, the human race is essentially a bunch of cattle anyway, and if you're going to give us technological secrets, have a field day. Go ahead. Take your biological specimen. So I don't have a whole lot to contribute in that direction except to mention it, but I think that it's something that people should think about. And in this continuing effort to expand consciousness, some things that are worthy of thought are not necessarily pleasant, but they should be considered.
Yeah, I agree. We have Harry Truman. I think Truman was, at least as far as what we know of any MJ-12 documents that were released years ago, with redactions like crazy. One wonders if they just didn't write these up just for the sake of making us think that we were actually getting our hands on something. I know that there's a lot of disinformation in some things that I've read, just on the basis of some cases that I've done research on, field research, in the manner of a Len Stringfield or Ted Phillips, or, you know, I wouldn't in any way put myself on a pedestal with either two of those gentlemen, though. You know, we all have it in us to get to the truth, and there are different ways to go about it. It's not been something that I've done as a career. Stringfield spent his time actually preparing and studying virtually every case that he could get his hands on. And when he died, J. Allen Hynek took his place and began putting out nothing but disinformation. I mean, he was the inventor of the term swamp gas. Stringfield didn't have to resort to such methods. And so obviously the government still took into account what he would say, but they would know the truth. And then they would, if there was any manipulation of Stringfield's research, it was by the MJ-12 people, because this is the biggest secret of all time on this planet. And they don't want it getting out, but come on, there's millions of people that know what's happening. Millions. It's just that they're concerned that it's going to shake their financial castle that they've created. They've spent hundreds of years brainwashing people and building up this structure to do what they're trying to do, and it's, you know, we've thrown wrenches into the works at every turn. And we're influencing other people to do the same thing. So, you know, I'm appreciative of that. But to underscore what you're saying, it doesn't matter if it's Tesla or Reich or Leonard Stringfield or J. Allen Hynek. We had a couple of presidents that that knew what was going on. Certainly Truman knew what was going on. And great changes in the policy of the shadow, or I should say policies of the shadow government, took place. And Eisenhower himself, I mean, they had to feign a visit to a dentist in Palm Springs as a cover story for him to meet with an alien group. It's ridiculous the levels they go to hide the truth. And, you know, they use this excuse that people will go crazy if they find the truth. Look at all the people going crazy because of the lies, you know. Think about it like that. I mean, and because of all the pharmaceutical drugs and the toxins and everything, you know, they've created monsters, and they've done this themselves, but they've created the karma for it too. That's my comment on that.
Like all karmas, you know, it's sooner or later going to come right around and bite them in the behind. And maybe those days have arrived.
Yeah.
The next topic I wanted to talk about is really interesting because this has been going on for a very long time. I'm also sure that the so-called elite have a great deal more knowledge about this than we do. And by we, I mean the general public. But needless to say, it's one of those topics where information has trickled down over the centuries, and enough of it has been gathered and pondered upon, and enough evidence has surfaced that I'm sure there's a great deal to this. And I've been involved in some of it myself in my personal research. And that's the subject of alchemy. Now, there was a guy by the name of Count Saint Germain who made appearances in various epochs of history that at least give the impression that the guy had to have lived for several hundred years. And his death was never certain to begin with. He just kind of disappeared in the end. But during the times when he would make these appearances, he gave demonstrations. He actually gave demonstrations of his prowess in the field of alchemy by transmuting base metals into gold, and by liquefying precious gems, and creating glass that had exceptionally unusual properties, and of course by healing lots of people of diseases that were considered to be incurable. And all of these feats required considerable knowledge of alchemy. Now, most people figure that alchemy, if there's anything to it, is essentially the knowledge of somehow changing base metals into gold. I mean, when you speak to the average folks about alchemy, that's the impression that they have. But actually, that whole aspect where everybody puts their focus is only one very small facet of the study of this marvelous science of alchemy. It actually has three major components. One of them, of course, which embodies this transmutation of elements from base metals into gold, is known as mineral alchemy. But that's not the only one. Then there's spagyrics. And spagyrics is essentially alchemy of plant life and vegetable materials. And then there's the third category of forbidden alchemy. Now, of course, if you look at this, the three forms of alchemy address the three major kingdoms in the entire spectrum of creation. You have the minerals, vegetables, and animal. Now, there's not much said about forbidden alchemy, because of the fact that it has really been suppressed. But there's a lot to be said about it if you dig into the subject. And the reason that I'm bringing that up and putting my emphasis on that is because of what it can potentially lead to. There were experiments done by people like Paracelsus, for instance, where they actually understood the basics of this forbidden alchemy to such an extent that they created beings from sperm without having the female counterpart involved, and they perform all kinds of very peculiar experiments in which living creatures were brought forth from basic materials such as blood, bone, and flesh, things of that nature, which seems to imply that this forbidden alchemy somehow addresses a subject that's at least close to DNA and genetics, even if it's something more than that. And one of the things that's really profound about this is that there are certain trends which are even now being formally investigated, but which were written about years and years ago, even back in the Dark Ages, about the fact that there are a whole series of developmental stages in the appearance of any given species, and that this can be seen literally in the early stages of development of the embryo, when it's organizing itself and growing, you know, towards its final design. And, you know, I've seen pictures, for instance, where the human embryo at one point resembles a fish, another point it resembles a pig, another point it resembles something else, and then finally it takes on the human form and grows, you know, to completion. Now, there's lots of different interpretations of that. But the interesting thing is that if this idea is true, that earlier information that represents the development of the species down through the eons of time is still entrapped in the DNA and the genetics of a given species, that could have a lot of interesting, it could supply a lot of interesting explanations for phenomenon that, that you and I have talked about. But before I go there, let me interject something which is pretty amazing. There's a very fascinating gentleman, who is essentially a vertebrate paleontologist. His name is Jack Horner, and he's been doing all kinds of research in vertebrate paleontology. His primary interest is dinosaurs. But he spent so many years in the field gathering information on fossils and reassembling fossils and studying all that stuff that in the later aspect of his career, he's been concentrating on some of the newer things that are popping up in paleontology. And one of them is the survival of genetic materials and the survival of minerals from fossils that are millions of years old. And very interesting new concepts have come out of this type of investigation, and he's written about it, and so have other people. But one of the things that's fascinating is the fact that this idea that the earlier stages of development of something are still imprisoned in the genetic code and can be evoked to come forth without having the original genetic material, but by tampering with the markers that tells various portions of the body how much to grow, when to stop growing, essentially those portions of the code which determine form. Now, head studies were pretty much directed towards chicken because the most recent investigations demonstrate pretty strongly that dinosaurs evolved into birds, and the ones that survived, you might say, are the very species of birds that are in existence today. Bigger things like the T-Rex and the Brachiosaurus and Stegosaurus and Triceratops and what have you have perished. But the interesting thing is, for instance, if you could tamper with the markers, the growth markers within the genetic code for a chicken while it's still in the embryonic state, it might be possible to hatch out a creature which was a predecessor to a chicken. And that process can go back, you know, quite a few generations. Now, they've already created birds with teeth by this process. And they've already created birds that only have a few feathers and have reptilian type of skin and other features like that. And the latest thing they're trying to do now is to provoke the growth of a bird with a long tail. And then the next step would be to provoke a bird that had forearms instead of wings. So they're not doing this like they did in Jurassic Park, where they find the DNA of a dinosaur in a sample of blood in a mosquito that's preserved in amber. They're doing this by taking an egg and essentially causing it to reverse its evolutionary development by tampering with these markers. Now, the reason I bring this up is pretty interesting. If we switch our attention now to a different genre altogether, and we go and talk about people like yogis and people who have spent a lifetime learning how to control various aspects of their body, like slowing their heart down, dilating their own veins and arteries, and adjusting blood pressure and metabolism, those guys, under certain conditions, also can heal wounds and cause diseases to disappear, and they do that by modifying their own genetic structure. Not that they turn into something different necessarily, but they can control these markers and thereby alter the environment that would be conducive to disease, for instance. And that's how their bodies remain pristine for so long. So now let's put these two things together and talk about the possibility of someone who has acquired enough control from early training and by being taught how to do it, that he can also modify his genetic markers. Do you think that it would be possible for that person to shift shapes? Now, we know that the idea of this concept of shape-shifting is very old, and it's manifest independently in every world culture, and it gives rise to all these werewolf stories and other related phenomena. In more modern times, it was written about in the guise of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and there's countless stories that seem to imply that we have an innate understanding of the possibility that a human being can temporarily or permanently become something else. So if we now combine all these thoughts with the idea that the elite or somebody behind the elite has alien technology and very ancient information at their disposal, it could very well be possible that all of this is put together in a way that explains the reptilian phenomenon, where people have actually been photographed morphing from human form into something less human. And, of course, most of the time it's shrugged off as being a problem with the camera, or nobody really saw what they thought they saw, and all these other traditional explanations. But the fact of the matter is, that if you have an open mind and you expand your consciousness to the point where you look at the possibilities and you're aware of all of the things that are going on that could lend support to this, it suddenly takes on a very different complexion, and it's not so far out. So, Don, since you really enjoy this particular topic and you have expressed multiple points of view on it in the past, I would really love to hear your input on what I just disclosed.
I've got a couple of different thoughts going through my head. You remember back in, I think it was July of 1996, we were hearing about the cloning. It was described as the first cloned mammal, Dolly the sheep. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, very well.
Okay. Dolly the sheep died in, I think, February, 6.5 years later. So that would have been, what, 2003? And we were told that this was the first time an animal had been cloned, and yet in my Barack Obama piece in the Three Stooges Go to Washington part 7B on my website, but part 7 for sake of argument, I alluded to the fact that there was a strong possibility that there was some cloning going on via the DNA that had been discovered in Egypt. You're familiar with the story, and many of my listeners are. So the technology described back then had to do with frog eggs, and they could take the nucleus out of one egg and put it into another egg and grow an animal. So we know that technology, despite what we were told in 1996 when all this hoopla came out, was available at least 44 years earlier. And I submit that it was probably even into the early, or let's say around 1920, at least. And given what you've described about alchemy, it could have been a couple of hundred years ago. Why not? If not more. Certainly in other civilizations. So this is a revived technology. As civilizations fall by the wayside and new ones spring up, regardless of the cause for that, you know, if you get into Lemuria or Atlantis comes to mind, Sumeria, these technologies were dabbled in before. You remember when President Reagan died and there was all this talk about stem cell research, and that kind of died down, didn't it? We don't hear anything anymore about stem cell research. All we're hearing about are all these pathogens and these recombinant viruses that they're growing today to unleash upon mankind to do just what you're describing, to affect our DNA. And I had a third thought. This is the humorous side of me this evening. I thought, well, if they can do these things, like if they're working on growing a bird with a tail, consider that they could create a mammal, a two-legged mammal, normally recognized as a human being, grow it without a tongue, and we would have a creature that would not be able to lie, and we could call it a politician. So
no, actually, it's the opposite. It couldn't be a politician.
Well, but I'm saying it would be the new breed of politicians, is what I'm saying.
Well, I'm sure they'd find a way to compensate. They're very resilient in that regard. But, yes, you've hit some interesting points. And one of them, when you bring up the knowledge that was prevalent in Atlantis and how some of this information, you know, could be resurfacing, two thoughts come to mind on that. I know that the military has been working on their own secret projects in genetics, to produce the perfect soldier type of thing. And they've actually talked about genetically engineering human beings, for instance, with gills so that they could stay underwater indefinitely if they had to and they wouldn't have to carry an oxygen pack. Then they talk about people with soldiers with extraordinary strength and endurance and all these different things. And some of this stuff necessitates the marriage between DNAs of two different species. Like, for instance, to produce gills in a human being is an interesting feat, unless you can go all the way back in time with these genetic code modifications to some point where our most remote ancestors may have had gills. But barring that explanation, they're talking about and have been talking about the combination of the genes or genetic material from more than one species. And of course, you know, this is really playing God, because now you're creating stuff that isn't supposed to be here. But the interesting thing about it is that's not new. You know, that was done in Atlantis and in Lemuria and places like that, and it was widespread in its application. And the interesting thing is, you know, the Atlanteans invaded Greece at one point in time, and it's interesting that the Grecians were one of the earlier cultures that propagated a lot of the mythological creatures that people enjoy hearing about, but nobody really puts any fact into the possibility that they may have been real. You know, like centaurs, for instance, and some of these other creatures which are half animal and half man. So if this was done in the past, like everything else that's resurfacing, there's no reason why the same type of mentalities for similar reasons would try to reproduce things of that sort now. Probably with a lot more negative intent. But I venture to say that the state of the art is light years ahead of what the public is allowed to know, because that seems to be the general trend.
There's always what we're allowed to know and what we know are two different things, though.
Well, that's true, but I'm not talking about exceptions. I'm talking about, you know, the general information that's truly released. It's usually years and years behind the actual place where they're at.
Well, you know, yes, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I could take it a step further and say that everybody knows. It's just a matter of remembering it, you know, becoming conscious of it.
That just brings us back to the whole topic of consciousness all over again.
Yes. It's, you know, and back to, you know, what they do to keep us from tapping into that or from remembering it. We all know this, and on some level we feel it. It's like this topic that we started the show out with tonight. A lot of people are smelling a rat, and it's not hard to smell it because the stench is spreading out all over the world. Everybody knows something is definitely wrong, but you know, they're counting on this repetition. You know, make a little 15-second tape loop of somebody running away from a reporter and keep showing it over and over and over and over again. And that wasn't my VoIP program repeating. I was repeating that with my voice. So, it's, you know, it'd be interesting. Maybe they could consider cloning something that had a brain, you know?
A functioning brain.
Yeah, exactly. Well, go ahead, Jim.
Well, that was pretty much the main point I wanted to make, was that, you know, I know a lot of people are very down on the idea that there are reptilians out there, and that even if they're there, they're certainly not capable of shape-shifting. But we really don't know what type of powers the human organism is capable of if it were trained properly from a very early age. To have conscious control over your DNA markers or your genetic codes might not be impossible. And that was my whole point in bringing this up. It may not be the case. I'm not supporting it. I'm just throwing it out there as a possibility, because when you think about stuff that's this far outside the box, it does something to you. It expands your mind. It expands mm-hmm. your capabilities of alternative thought. And all those functions are essentially facets of an expanded consciousness, which is what we've been talking about for months.
Yes, Jim, your comments are very timely. Just yesterday, I did about 3 hours of radio with Ken Adachi. One of those hours was with Dr. H. U. Watt, and we were talking about a particular state hospital in the state of Texas, where there were all kinds of unusual phenomena going on. There were teenagers in this facility, and I suspect that a large number of them don't belong there. There's no plausible reason except for the sadistic experiments and fraud that's going on there. But there are some off-the-chart phenomena that are going on in relationship to a person that worked there. And a family member, actually three family members, and I don't want to preempt anything that Ken wants to bring out on this story. This is a developing story, but there is something to support everything you're saying in terms of a member of this family or three members of this family. This is going on. This is not imagination, and I've heard the account. I interviewed this lady for a solid hour yesterday, and she does not waver from her story. And although her account stretches the limits of plausibility, there's no reason to discount what she's saying. She's not even someone of a background to try to pull this off as some kind of a hoax. What she says checks out. I've done research on many of the facts that she's brought out. And the connections behind the scenes are astounding. And it connects to the space program. I can say that much. We brought that out on a show last night with Dr. Rott. So as time goes on, you and I will probably end up talking about this as well as Ken when he's on the show. It supports everything you're saying. Absolutely, 100%.
Well, that's an interesting coincidence, because I certainly didn't collaborate this with you, as you know.
No, you probably didn't hear the show either, so.
No, actually, I didn't. But it doesn't surprise me, because what goes around comes around. And you know what's really interesting, though, and this is something which gives me a great deal of hope, although it is also confusing at the same time. And what I've noticed, because the groups that I associate with are on the side of light, I have no interest in associating myself with the dark quadrant, if you want to call it that. But what's interesting is that both the technological, spiritual, and mental aspects of the group that's in the light and the group that's in the dark are both expanding rapidly at this point in time. And so I find that to be really amazing, because it's like they are essentially opposites with opposite intentions, and yet they both appear to be preparing for something. And I can only hope that the goodness will prevail. But it's just interesting to me that the same forces and the same knowledge is propagating in two different directions, almost like a tree with a split trunk. And, there's some kind of a message in that, because I can feel it at a very, very fundamental level, but I can't quite get a hook into what it means. Do you know what I'm trying to say about this?
Yes, absolutely. This expansion process that you're describing, as those that are in the dark or operating from the dark side, who are the, and we've talked about this on, in past shows, who are the dichotomy of the creation, are lowering themselves in frequency and trying to pull us down in frequency. But what's happening is those of us that are operating in the light, who are expanding, are raising our frequency. And there's a much greater potential to raise your frequency than there is to lower it. They've only got a half a hertz to go, and they've hit rock bottom. If you think about it in that context.
Yeah, actually, that's very interesting, because if you go in the other direction, you've almost got infinite room for growth. So
yes.
It's like, how low can you go?
Mm-hmm.
That's a really, really insightful analogy, Don. I appreciate that.
Well, you can only put the limbo bar so low until it touches the ground, okay?
Exactly. And then, of course, you can't get under it.
Exactly. That's when they hit rock bottom. And you know, and they like to think of themselves as the opposite, you see. They call themselves enlightened, yet they're void of light. Or devoid of light.
That's an oxymoron in itself.
Yeah, we're just a moron. Yep. Well, I'm glad you appreciated that account. I mean, that's how I see it, really. I agree with what you're saying. Sort of like being on a teeter-totter, and, you know, the creation was made to have balance. The part of the creation is to have these dichotomies, but it was always intended to be in balance. What's happening is their end of the teeter-totter is getting shorter, and it's ready to touch bottom, and ours is getting longer, and it's reaching up into, like you said, into infinity. And the difference is that in from their perspective, they are running out of time, and we will be liberated from time. We will no longer be constrained by time.
Well, that's a good thing, because, you know, time is actually a function of lower consciousness to begin with. When you reach a certain point where time has no meaning for you, you have essentially crossed over into a different dimension. And, you know, this very well may be what defines some of these higher beings that we know exist, is the fact that they are capable of coming here, but they essentially exist outside our comprehension of time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's certainly worthy, a worthy goal to strive for.
Wouldn't it be interesting if we could see a definitive reaction, and this is always going on anyway in a philosophical sense, but let's say there's some proclamation that occurs, someone wins an award, and the Earth responds to the truth of that. So, you have this long-legged Mac Daddy that got the Nobel Peace Prize nominated prior to being inaugurated illegally, and yet 11 days into the administration, it's determined that he's going to be the recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize. It would be interesting just to see the Earth puke, give us a mirror image of that event, exactly as the Earth perceives it, because really that's what's going on in the rest of the universe when such events take place. There, I'm being a bit base in my description, but you know, with all intent to be so. The Earth goes through some kind of a electromagnetic storm, or or an earthquake or something when such events take place. Or maybe some of nature dies, you know, some plant life dies or an animal dies. But those of us who are conscious and aware can actually shift that and make it be something else. And I think that is also something that's going on because with the things that they're trying to do to subjugate or eliminate humanity on this planet for the purpose of enslaving a handful of survivors or maybe even eliminating all of us. I mean, they lie about everything, so should we really trust that their intention is to reduce the population to 500 million and stop there? They stop at nothing, because they won't be gratified then. Well, you know, we're going to have to change it to 400,000 or 300,000, or we don't need any of them. This is our place. It begs the question, why are we here? We're certainly not here to suit their purposes. I can tell you that definitively. I know that. And everyone I know in the truth movement knows that same thing, including you.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you did bring up a very intriguing point, too. We've talked about it in the past. The experiments of Clave Baxter, for instance, where, you know, he found out that plants react to people's emotions and to people's intentions. And I don't know that anybody's ever tried this, but I'm willing to bet you that the mineral world also would respond. And the earth is a living, conscious entity that's composed primarily of minerals. And when you put enough people on it that are transmitting negative concepts on a regular basis, of course it's going to affect it. Why wouldn't it? Everything mm-hmm. is one. Everything is an expression of the unity. So, you know, maybe this is one of the reasons why you've got eruptions going on all over the place and strange weather patterns and earthquakes and volcanic tremors and God only knows what else. The earth is already responding.
Yeah. I'm just using that gross analogy just to say, you know, wouldn't it be great just to see an instantaneous response that everyone recognizes? And so the truth is revealed. And I agree with you about the elementals, especially in the mineral kingdom, because when you take oil out of the ground and use it for the purposes that it's used, and not to mention the subjugation of humanity and the enrichment of a handful of psychopaths, those elementals come out with the oil, and they're unleashed upon the surface of the earth. And they, of course, they want chaos, and on some level, and they're that's the perfect medium to talk about for alchemy, isn't it? I mean, they've turned oil into roads, they've turned it into toys, they've turned it into computers, telephones. Think of all the things that are made from plastic alone, all the different fuels that they make. And they blame all this on us. That's the funny thing about it. They blame it on us. It's insanity. And I think it's just as insane that we allow them to do that. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. But I've been preaching that forever. I mean, I can't imagine why we let them get away with most of the stuff that they do, you know. But for some reason, we do. I think it has something to do with the fact that most people are inherently good. And a good person, just by his nature, wants to avoid conflict, wants to avoid aggravation, wants to avoid all these negative things because a healthy organism is pleasure-seeking. And so by its very nature, it's going to gravitate towards a more placid, a more satisfying, a more docile type of existence, if it can. And I think that the negative people in this world know this and understand it very well. And what they've developed is a technique where they push a little bit at a time until they establish a particular point where the opposing faction is not going to take anymore. And then they back off and let a new equilibrium develop. And this is the strategy that they've been using now for 100 and some odd years, possibly thousands of years if they've done it in other cultures.
Oh, we've had it. You know, we've been talking about false flag events for the past 10 months, have we not? 11 months, really for years, but recently, I mean, many people are coming out predicting more false flag events, and we just had two in the last day. You know, it's quite obvious the signature is on these events, you see. And we have the fraud and we have the lies and the deceit and the propaganda and everything. Is that the best they can come up with? Really? That these enlightened beings that they like to call themselves, is that the best they can come up with? I don't even have the capacity to pity such creatures, to tell you the truth.
Well, maybe they've gotten so complacent and so confident in their position that they don't even try hard anymore because they're of the belief that we'll swallow anything they hand us.
Yeah, you're right. Now, in terms of, again, in a sense, we may have gone off on a tangent, but I want to try to give you the opportunity to conclude your outline. I'm not really clear on how much more you want to cover, but certainly anyone that's listening to this has got to be understanding the source of the world's problems in a multidimensional way. You know.
Well, actually, I had several other points on my original outline, but they're so different from what we're talking about now that maybe they'd be better off, you know, being the nucleus of a different discussion. Frankly, the so-called tangent that you mentioned has steered us to a very interesting place because, you know, this last series of topics brings us, you know, right to where the hypothetical things that we've been talking about are actually merging with reality. And this is a function of consciousness in itself. So what more can you ask for as far as a show that's based on the idea of expanding consciousness? Look where it took us.
Yeah, and you know, Jim, I find it rather ironic that so many billions or even trillions of dollars have been spent on all these different methods to obfuscate the truth, to prevent us from being conscious, to prevent us from being in touch with the, not just the creator, but the principles of the creation itself. So much attention and detail has been spent to dissect that connection, which is very natural and very simplistic in its true nature. And it really doesn't cost anything to tap into that or to reconnect with that. That's the irony of this, is that those people that are looking for answers to understanding what's going on in the world, if they could simply grasp the concept that we've talked about so many times in making that heart connection with the creation, that doesn't mean you forget that you have a brain or a mind or a will or a body or any of those things. Those are just tools. But to understand who you are and the power that comes from understanding who you are doesn't cost all this money. And you don't have to be secretive about it. The only problem that exists is that those that created this illusion, this reality based nothing on, I say reality, of course that's an oxymoron, but the reality that they've created for themselves and tried to shove down our throats and apply like you would a suppository, is really all based upon their own fear. Because really they know exactly what they're doing. They know the outcome. It's just that the fear level doesn't allow them to face it. And it doesn't have to be that way. That's the funny thing. They've chosen this knowing full well that they're going to fail.
Well, maybe it's the old idea of, maybe we'll fail ultimately, but look at the great time we can have before we hit rock bottom. And since they don't know exactly when that's going to be, then they just push for extending the status quo. You know, that's a very childish attitude, but it's pretty prevalent. I mean, you can see children doing that, you know, in their normal behavior. So, you know, it's just like get the most that you can now because you're not sure what you're going to get later.
I think they full well. I just think that that they themselves are in denial, you see. That's why they create a reality of denial, to make everyone else deny what they see. And that's pretty pathetic. It is. But as I'll repeat, I don't have pity for them because they have the same choices we have. And in light of what they like to call themselves and how grand they see themselves in their reality, you would think that they could at least be honest with themselves, but they can't. It's an impossibility. And it's a role that they chose to play. I'm clear on that, that something has to be dichotomous to the creation. There's no doubt about that. So Jim, we're out of time, but I want to give you a chance to make a final comment on what I just said. If you feel it's worthy of one, and certainly we can pick up this topic again and attempt to move through all the aspects of this talk that you wanted to cover.
Well, I'm certainly in agreement with you. You know, there's something different and something perverse about the way in which these people function, and I'm not a psychiatrist or anything, but it might be worthwhile for us to consider exactly what it is that makes them different. And, you know, that in a sense could be a show that would be really interesting because it brings in this whole idea of the retrospective individual and the prospective individual, which we've touched upon a few times before. And they are all driven by very, very different forces than the rest of us are. So your intuition is right on, as usual.
Well, I'm feeling and thinking through the heart, you know. It's become very clear to me that despite what is said, when they lie, when they fabricate these stories, and you use psychiatrists, for example, isn't it ironic that the so-called shooter of 43 people was a psychiatrist. I think even the title is a misnomer because they're certainly not treating the psyche of an individual. The psyche is not the mind. And you know, they're passing themselves off as mental doctors that are going to get one's thinking straight, and yet everything they do secretly is centered on mind control. That to me is very invasive. And in a universal sense, I can't think of anything lower that you can do to yourself if you understand the core concept of what the creation is. And everything being created out of one, certainly these individuations that have become insane and what's the word I want to use here? I mean, it's insane. That should be enough right there. How can you make sense out of insanity? How can you define it? There's no clear cut path other than it's reflected in the reality that they've created. Everything is chaotic. absolutely chaotic. And I can't imagine anyone, even the intelligence agencies, listening to the show, not admitting that it's chaos. But they also have to admit that they created it with intention to, like, as you said, to be God, to play God. But they don't really understand God, do they? Other than that, the one individual in heaven that tried to be God ended up being the being that they worship. And I certainly wouldn't want to be in that being's shoes. This is the guy they admire, or the entity they admire. It's sick. Well, Jim, I appreciate your comments and your wisdom on tonight's show. Any closing comment that you'd like to make?
Well, as usual, I enjoyed being here, and I always hope that when I construct these outlines and we follow them best we can, that the intention that I have when I do that is transmitted to the listeners, and that they realize that there's so much more to this world than what we're taught. You know, that it's foolish not to dabble into other things, because you're chipping yourself out of entire segments of a subject that could easily add an enormous amount of gratification to your life. And that, of course, gets us back again to this concept of expanding the consciousness.
Yes.
Anyhow, that's my message, and I hope that people find it interesting, and we'll continue on with it as long as you like it.
Yes. Well, I always enjoy your information, as do our listeners. I hear it all the time. Jim, I wish you a great weekend. I look forward to the show next week, and we'll see where we are with these fictional stories that we've been presented with over the past few days. Let's see how they transform themselves into a lower vibration. It's the only place they can go with it. So I thank you, and have a great weekend.
Well, thank you, Don. Same to you.
Okay. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, Wind Talkers Radio Network, and blogtalkradio.com. Special thanks to all those folks sending in little text messages of tidbits of information. Liz, sorry we couldn't take your call, but we had too much to discuss. By the way, Jim, Liz suggested it might have been Whitley Strieber. I'm not sure if that's the person that you were looking for, but that was her contribution anyway, off the air.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Whitney Strieber. That's an interesting story in itself.
Yeah. Okay. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick on the sound. Those folks in the United Galactic Federation, Galaxy of Hendon, who have made it possible for this show to be heard all over the place. We wish you well and safety and Godspeed in your mission. And to the listening audience, thank you for tuning in, and join us again next week on Monday. My special guest will be Dr. H. Huat. In the meantime, have a great weekend. I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.